Now, most of us like to be winners, and many of us like to play games. The author of a new book says, personal finance can be less intimidating and boring if we look at it as more of a game with rewards to follow. She says money gets a bad rap, and we often consider it to be what stands between us and our dreams, but she says it doesn't have to be that way if we have the knowledge and understanding to feel control of our money. Kristen Wong has written about personal finance and the economy for the New York Times, NBC News, Forbes, and more. She's the author of the new book, Get Money, Live the Life You Want, Not Just the Life You Can Afford. Kristen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Well, it seems like one of the biggest obstacles when we think or talk about money is that we don't really want to think or talk about money. Why is this a subject a lot of us want to avoid?
Well, I think from a young age, we're kind of discouraged from talking about it. Like, it's just not something polite you discuss at the dinner table, right? You know, and money is also very intimidating for people. There's a lot of judgment surrounding it. A lot of us have financial shame from past money mistakes. So there are a handful of reasons why we want to avoid talking about money. The problem with that is it's really hard to learn about something when you don't talk about it, right?
Is there a thing where people who are grown-ups think, I'm a grown-up, I should know this stuff by now. Everybody else has this under control. I don't. What's wrong with me?
Exactly. I think that's probably the main reason most of us want to learn about money and understand money in the first place is we think, well, you know, I'm in my late 20s, I'm in my 30s, I'm in my 40s. I should have my financial life together by now. Let's get this thing going. But that's actually a really boring and terrible reason to want to get money in the first place, right? Because when push comes to shove and you're trying to cut back and you're trying to make good financial decisions, let's say, you know that you shouldn't splurge on this fancy restaurant dinner that your friends want to go to. Well, it's going to be really hard to say no to that if the only reason you're saying no to that is so that you can be a responsible adult. You know what I mean? If you have a reason for wanting to understand money and a reason for wanting it in your life, then I think that just puts you in a totally different position where you have now a reason to say no because you give yourself something to say yes to.
And that's a big part of your book, looking at motivation. So as you say, instead of I want to save money because I feel like I should save money, you say people should figure out a goal so that they have something concrete in mind when they're saving that money. So what kind of things are you talking about?
Well, when I say a goal, I just mean something that is specific and meaningful to you that you want to use your money for. What do you want to use your money for? It can be something, it can be stuff, right? Like you might want to buy a new car. I don't know. It could be an experience, like maybe you want to save up for an epic trip to Europe or something. Or you can buy yourself a feeling. Like I know when I was in student loan, I really wanted to get out of it because I got tired of feeling weighed down by that debt. And I really wanted to feel like, you know, I could use my money however I wanted to, move into a bigger place, whatever it was. But I wanted to buy the feeling of liberation, I guess, you know? So I think it just really comes down to getting clear about why you want to have a good relationship with money. Why do you want to get your financial life in order? And really understanding what those reasons are so that you can work toward them.
Talking to Kristen Wong, her new book is Get Money, Live the Life You Want, Not Just the Life You Can Afford. And you're pitching this book, Kristen, not just to people who already have money to manage. You're trying to talk to people, I think, at a lot of different levels of the economic spectrum, including people who are having trouble making do on a day-to-day level. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, in the book, you know, I talk about a lot of, you know, it is for people at different levels in their financial life. There are a lot of, I talk about debt in the book and options you have if you're really struggling with debt, because I think it's harder than ever to get out of debt for a lot of people and something that they think they're going to be saddled with forever. So, you know, I think it's important as personal finance writers and reporters to kind of talk about those options as well, because a lot of people really do struggle to get by financially on a day-to-day basis. I think a big part of it is, is psychological too. You know, you can, a lot of times, you know, I've been writing about money for the past 5 or 6 years, and one thing I always hear people say is, why don't they teach this stuff in schools? If I just learned this in schools, I'd be good with money. Well, that's not necessarily true, you know? Financial knowledge is one part of the equation. The other part is, this is really about your habits and your behavior. So that's a big part of what my book is about, is I really talk about the psychology behind why it's hard to understand understand money, why it's hard to get personal finance, you know? It's not just the knowledge. You can do all the math and learn all the money rules and learn how 401ks work, but if you don't have some control over your habits and your behavior and your mindset, it's going to be very difficult to put that knowledge into practice.
Well, let's start putting it into practice. Say we have the idea, okay, a budget, that sounds like a good thing, one of the basics. How can we, if we're not budgeting now, how can we start a budget that we're actually going to, you know, keep track of and actually stick with keeping track of for not just a day, but weeks?
Well, one kind of controversial method. A lot of personal finance experts talk about this, and one that I interviewed in my book says, you know, get rid of budgets altogether.
Huh.
Have a spending plan instead. I will let you in on a secret, Rob. A budget and a spending plan are pretty much the same thing. But a spending plan is just that. It's a plan for your money and how you're going to use it, but with one crucial difference. In that you have a goal for it. You have something you're working toward, whether it's saving, you know, paying off a $10,000 loan so that, like I said, you could move into a bigger place, or, you know, in my case, you could move out of your mother's house. Or maybe it's saving $5,000 for an amazing trip to South America. With a spending plan, it's goal-based. So your goal is the main thing driving all of your financial decisions. And I think just having that, you know, can really help you actually stick to a budget. So again, when you go to those really tough money decisions where you have a choice of saying yes or no, you're going to say yes to your goal. So you're going to make better decisions that support you instead of, you know, you're going to feel like money is working for you instead of the other way around.
And you write that one of the obstacles to sticking with a budget or a spending plan, whichever one we want to call it, is that impulsive moment. And you give some sort of practical advice on how to maybe rethink those impulsive purchase decisions. Can you share a couple with us?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. So that's a big part of sticking to a budget, like impulsive spending, emotional spending, stress spending. And I think just understanding the weird ways in which your brain works against you is a big step in the right direction. And there are a lot of like cognitive biases that kind of, again, weird ways our brain works against us. There are a lot of cognitive biases that get in the way when it comes to money specifically. One of them is the sunk cost fallacy. And with the sunk cost fallacy, it's basically when you keep making a decision that might not be the right decision because of time or resources, money that you've already invested in that decision. This comes into play with investing a lot, but it also comes into play with day-to-day spending decisions. I will give you a personal example. If you are, let's say that you have it in your head that you need to go to IKEA and get, you know, this little nightstand or something you saw online. You drive all the way to IKEA, you fight for parking, you go through their little the rat maze that is IKEA, and you discover they don't have the table you want, but you came all this way, you fought for parking. You know, you have to buy something. I don't want to show, you know, I can't leave here empty-handed. So then you spend $300 on a bunch of stuff that you might not necessarily need and didn't really budget for because of that sunk cost fallacy.
We're talking to Kristen Wong. Her new book is Get Money, Live the Life You Want, Not Just the Life You Can Afford. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you talk with, I don't know, friends or loved ones about money and finances, or do you steer clear of that kind of conversation? Do you feel overwhelmed when it comes to dealing with money? Have you found budgeting ideas that help keep you on track? Do you have questions about how to get motivated and maybe start that budget or spending plan? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Kristen Wong. She's been writing about money and personal finance for years for the New York Times, MSN Money, Forbes, and more. Her new book is Get Money, Live the Life You Want, Not Just the Life You Can Afford. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you shy away from talking or even thinking about money? Is your financial situation sort of a monster in a closet or file cabinet you'd rather leave undisturbed? Or did you move from there to maybe taking on money issues? What did you do? What worked for you? What works for you? Have you set a budget? Or do you have questions for our guest about getting motivated when it comes to mastering our money? Call 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Kristen, you write about how and when and why to have an emergency fund and how to pull the trigger on when to use it. Can you talk about what we can think about?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody needs to have an emergency fund just because it's important to have financial buffers, a buffer between you and, you know, financial ruin. You know, if you lose a job, you get in a car, you know, something happens to your car, you need to have reserves on hand to cover you, not just because of the money aspect, because, you know, you could put that on a credit card and pay it off or whatever, but just having that fund there and knowing that you're going to be okay is everything. Like, that just changes your whole approach to money. You feel in control. You feel like you have some power. And I think most of us feel the exact opposite when it comes to money. We feel like money controls us. It controls all of our day-to-day decisions. So having something as simple as, like, you know, even when I was starting my emergency fund, I think I saved, you know, I saved like $1,000 or something that wasn't a lot, but it made me feel like, okay, maybe I can do this money thing. I have some kind of sense of control over my finances. So I think, you know, everybody should have something like that. As far as when to use it and when not to use it, I mean, I think there are some things that we inherently kind of know are emergencies and some things that we think are emergencies but not might not be. And I talk about, like, some really specific examples of this in my book. But, you know, even in the case of, like, if your car breaks down, you know, one question I would ask is this something that you need right now? Could you, or is there another option available for you? What are your other options for emergency options? Could you, you know, take the bus? Could you take public transportation? Maybe your answer to that is no. But if it's yes, then maybe you hold on to your emergency fund while you save up for that car repair, something like that. So, you know, it's not always completely obvious when you should and shouldn't use your emergency fund. I think a lot of times people think the rules are very cut and dry like that. But I think as long as you're thinking in terms of, like, you know, what are my other options when I'm in this state of emergency? Or is this something that I need to address immediately? I would say any health concerns are usually something you want to address immediately, because that might end up costing you more, which is another question to ask before you use your emergency fund. Like, if I ignore this problem right now, is it going to cost me even more down the road? In that case, I might want to take care of it now.
You mentioned your emergency fund giving you a feeling of control, and you write that some people look at the overall economy, student loan debt up. A lot of things are beyond people's control, the job market, wages, things like that. And that might dishearten people, discourage people from trying to control their own finances. You say, no, actually, it's the opposite. That makes it more important to control what you can.
Yeah, I think so, because I think there are, especially nowadays, so many factors outside of our control that are kind of working against us, which is why I think it's more important than ever to think about the things and find the things that we can control, even if it's some small decision you have, because any way that you can take back power is going to be important. Even if it's, I was talking to somebody the other day and he was saying, you know, it's so stupid, but, like, the saying no to this $3 latte, the latte factor, right? Like, just saying no to that made him feel like he was making decisions about his own financial life, which was everything. It's such a dumb little thing, you know, simple decision you can make, but it makes a big difference to your psyche. Even if you can save $5 extra a week. I know a lot of people who are like, I can't save money for retirement, so why bother? But I would say, even if you can save $5 a week, it's not even the $5. Like, okay, maybe that might add up. It might not be a lot, but it does a lot to your mindset. And it kind of gets you in this mode of, like, okay, there is something that I can do about my financial situation, however small it may be. And I think in those times where you feel powerless, it's more important than ever to look at what options you do have available.
I want to get into one more piece of advice that you talk about in the book, and that's selecting a bank. You say, not enough of us shop around. What should we shop around for? What should we look for in a financial institution?
Well, one thing I'm really surprised about is how many people are still at a bank that charges them a monthly maintenance fee, because there are so many And I think people are a little bit cautious about online-only banks. But, you know, I use an online-only bank. I know a lot of other personal finance writers and kind of money nerds in the space that are all about online-only banks or just banks that don't charge you a monthly maintenance fee or some kind of, you know, a lot of times they'll say, like, oh, you have to have X amount in your bank account or we're going to charge you this fee. You know, there are so many, like, Bankrate is a good site where you can use to compare different banks or credit unions that are not necessarily going to charge you that. I think NerdWallet is another site. You can just go and kind of compare different banks so you can, you know, look for something that's not going to charge you that fee and it's not going to charge you to hold your money there, which they shouldn't, you know.
And as we wrap up, Kristen, in our last minute or so, how can we break the silence? How can we start talking, you know, even just among friends about these money issues?
One thing I think is, you know, first to surround yourself with people who are comfortable talking about it, right? Because you don't necessarily want to go up to some, you know, a friend you've just met and or a first date or something and say, how much money do you make? That might be a little awkward.
True.
But I think surrounding yourself with like-minded people and just kind of asking the question when you feel comfortable with your friends. You know, with my friends, one thing we started asking each other is, you know, how much do you save for retirement? It's not something that we talked about openly before. Writing a book about money helps with that. You know, people want to talk to you about it more. But I think just bringing up the conversation around, you might be surprised if you start talking about money openly, how okay other people are with it and how appreciative they will be to just have that conversation with somebody.
Yeah, briefly, do you get a sense of relief when people can finally start talking about money?
Yes, I kind of geek out on it, of course, but when people start talking about openly, I get into it. I'm like, yes, I think it's very important with salary transparency, too. I have a lot of, you know, as a writer, I'm in a lot of, you know, groups with writer friends where we talk very openly about how much we charge and how much we make. And a lot of people in that group, including me, sometimes are like, oh, I didn't know I could charge this much. And just having that conversation is so eye-opening.
We'll leave it there for now. Kristen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
That's Kristen Wong. Her new book is called Get Money, Live the Life You Want, Not Just the Life You Can Afford.